My name's Sam. I'm Guy's mum. He was born at... Oh, God. Carly, I'm going already. He was born on the 13th of November, 2015. 25 weeks. And he weighed 265 grams.
Sam, can you tell me about how you and Martin met and got married?
We met when we were 16, 17, a really long time ago. We worked together, well, we actually went to school together, not in the same school years. So we recognised each other from school, got a job together in a sports shop. And then it was a few years later, Martin had already left, and then we bumped into each other on a night out one Easter Sunday. I already really fancied him, so just made a move. and then we started dating from there. Been together since 2004. Got engaged in 2009, I think. Yeah, 2009 Christmas 2009 in New York, and then went back to New York and got married on April Fool's Day, 2013, of all days.
And can you, what was your attitude to starting a family?
We felt quite traditional. We, obviously we were together for a very long time before we got engaged and got married, and both still lived at home. So we were very traditional in the fact that we wanted to be in our own house and be married before we had children. Obviously, if anything happened before we were married, it wasn't a big deal, but that was our ideal. We wanted to be in our own house first, and obviously then we had somewhere to have our family. After we got married, we decided we'd not long moved into our house, literally a few months before, so we decided we just wanted to have a year just to ourselves, enjoy our house, enjoy married life. And then maybe 18 months or so after we got married, we decided that we wanted to start trying for a family. We got pregnant, I think, in the January. We found out we were pregnant, 2015, but miscarried that pregnancy at the end of March. Well, we should have been 11 weeks, and baby was only 8 weeks, 5 days. It stopped growing, and we didn't know. So it was a miscarriage. We decided just to start trying straight away. We just wanted to get that behind us and just jump straight back in, start trying again. And then found out we were pregnant in the June, the end of June, with Guy. And that was just terrifying, because you just think, well, we've already lost one baby now, and we just felt so unsafe, because your eyes are just open to loss. You never expect that you're gonna lose a baby. We were in that zone of, oh my God, we're pregnant, that's it, now we've done it, we're gonna be parents, and then lost it. So that naivety had gone with Guy, and we were just terrified for those first 12 weeks. We just wanted to get to that scan. And that in itself was difficult, because our booking appointment didn't fall until the end of those 12 weeks, those first 12 weeks, whereas our first pregnancy, it was really early. And all the booking appointment said was this is when you come in to see us, but you won't get a scan on this appointment. So to us, that's all we wanted. We just wanted a scan, because you don't, I suppose, you know you're pregnant, but until you've seen that baby on that screen, that confirms it to you, that makes it real, doesn't it? Because you can't feel anything in your own body. So I rang up in hysterics at the maternity, and just why am I not getting a scan at that appointment? And I just don't think they understood my anxiety, even though I tried to explain it, and they didn't want to refer us to the other pregnancy unit, because they said we could do it, but you might as well just come to this scan. I eventually got her to book me an appointment so that I knew before I got there that day that I had a scan like 2 days later, which helped a little bit, settled my anxiety a bit. And then we had our 12-week scan in the August. I've never felt so sick. Never felt so sick. Because you just expect that you're going to get there and they're just going to say it again. You're just waiting for them to say, like, oh no, there's no heartbeat. There wasn't. There he was, just waving his little hands on the screen. So that was very exciting and very relieving. And I think that helped. That settled us quite a lot. We knew it was real then. We were felt safe again. We kind of got over that hurdle. And then things just carried on from there as normal, no problems. And waited until our 20-week scan. We decided we wanted to find out what it was. I'm a bit OCD. I need to know what it's going to be, and then I know what I can buy. We can decorate the rooms. And Martin was fine with that as well. He was like, that's fine. If you want to know, you can know. Both had our guesses on what it would be. Went to our 20-week scan, found out it was a boy, and everything was looking well. She was showing us all his organs and they were all developing well. We could see him wiggling on the screen, and his little feet were wiggling as mine were wiggling, which was very strange to see. And then she just said that she was going to refer us to come back at the end of the week because baby was measuring really small, but never really said why. She said, oh, baby's small, so you need to be seen by the consultant. But we couldn't get out of her what does that mean, like, how small? So if we're 20 weeks, what do you mean by small? Like, in terms of weeks, what is he measuring compared to what he should be? And I just don't think she was prepared to give us that information. It was like, well, no, you've got to see the consultant and then we'll, you know, see what happens from there. So we returned a few days later, saw a consultant who did the same anomaly scan, and he just said the same, baby was very small, and showed us, like, on the graph, they have like a growth chart, don't they? And so guy was like under the bottom line, so like under the third centile, which he said was really concerning. That was far too small. There can be a small baby, but that was very small. So he explained to us that it could be Down syndrome, which we'd had screening for, which was low risk, or it could be a placenta problem, but didn't really have anything else to say other than that. It was all, well, it might be this, it might be that. And just said, we can book you in for an amniocentesis in a few days' time, or you can be referred to a specialist clinic in Manchester, where they can look at your placenta in more detail. And that was a Friday afternoon, and then sort of got shoved away with that information to process over the weekend, and then not able to contact anybody until the Monday to sort of say what we wanted to do. So we went home and spoke about it, and we were just convinced that he's just going to be a small baby. We were small babies, so. And I'm tiny, so why wouldn't he just be a small baby? Obviously still concerned, because if the doctors are concerned, then you're going to feel it. But we were trying to let our hopes of it just being small take over a bit. We decided we didn't want to have an amnio because of the risks of miscarriage. We'd already been through that once, and we said we didn't want to put the baby at risk if unnecessarily, like, that test comes back normal and then we have a miscarriage, we've done harm for nothing, haven't we? So we just said we'd have our referral, and we would make a decision on an amnio later, and if we still needed to do it, we could do it after that. So we rang back on the Monday to our hospital and just asked for the referral, just said, can you just make it, as thinking it would be an urgent referral. Because obviously if they're worried that baby's small, we slightly worried, so we should be seen. So we got that referral, and then weren't seen until 23 weeks, which was really concerning for us, considering that was a 3 week wait where we didn't have a clue what we should be doing, what was wrong. And then after speaking to the hospital a few times, they'd explained that they couldn't do those scans until the 23 weeks, so that's why there was the wait. So eventually we got round to that scan at the end of October, and we could see the scan. We didn't have to like wait for them to see. They have like a monitor at the end, so we could see everything that was going on. And as soon as they like put the probe on, like the image was so poor on the screen, and I thought it looks a bit strange. Like you can usually see things a lot more clearly than that. And then got asked if I'd noticed any leaking in my fluid, which I hadn't. I'd never noticed anything before. I'd never noticed any leaking in the fluid. So once he finished the scan, he sat us down and just said that there was hardly any fluid around the baby, which was why the image was so bad on the screen, and that he wasn't moving, and that was because he was poorly. So like we would if we felt unwell, you just want to like get in bed and curl up, don't you? And that's basically what he was doing. He didn't have the energy to be moving around, so he was saving that energy and was just lying still, which would explain why I'd never felt any movements from him. Probably the odd kick, but when you're so early on, you don't really know what's kicks and what's not. So and he said the blood flow from the placenta was very poor. And Guy was only measuring around 250 grams, which was about half of the weight that he should have been for 23 weeks. And the ideal situation would be that if he could put on weight and at least double his weight and get to 26 weeks, there was a chance that they'd be able to get him out and obviously be nursed in special care. But the likelihood of that was very poor, and the chances were that he was going to die. So he explained about a study that they were doing in babies that were growth restricted, where they were testing like Viagra basically, to see if that can help improve blood flow, and whether we'd be interested in joining the study. So we had a bit of a discussion between us and just said, well, basically we have nothing to lose by doing it, because if we don't, he's gonna die. If we do, we're at least giving him a chance. Even though we could have had a placebo, we were still giving him a chance of getting the right drug and maybe getting him to that weight that he needed to be. So I decided to join up and do the trial, which we had various blood tests for, so many blood tests and loads of blood pressure checks. And that was another concern for us as well, because my blood pressure was really high, so I was being monitored for preeclampsia. And we had to go back a couple of days later for more checks as part of the study. The doctor gave us another scan while we were there as well, just to sort of have a look and see how things were. And then after that, we went back the following week to the clinic again. And things were just worse than the week before. The blood flow wasn't getting any better, it was getting worse. And obviously he wasn't putting on any weight, so we kind of got a timeline of within the next few weeks he would probably die on his own. So then we were broached with the option of terminating the pregnancy, which initially felt a bit like a bit of a relief in some way, like we could end this, because we didn't know how long this would carry on for. We knew our baby was going to die, but we didn't know how long we were just going to be carrying him around for. So we thought about it and really considered it and asked like when we would be able to have it done and what it would involve. So we were told we could book in for the following week, but it meant that we would have to, I thought that basically they would just induce me and he just wouldn't survive labour and delivery. But they said they would have to physically stop his heart, which would mean injecting potassium into his heart to stop it. It shocked us quite a lot because we didn't expect that. So we went away to think about it. We were booked in to have the procedure done, but went home to have a think about it. That's a really horrible decision to have to make. I think that really changed my mind. I kind of felt like the devil on the shoulder, and the little angel there, just as a nurse, my little nursey side was saying that it would be the right thing to do. I didn't know if he was suffering. If he wasn't getting the blood flow, then he wasn't getting what he needed, so there was a chance that he was suffering. And what's the point in causing him distress and making him struggle? But then obviously the mum side of you doesn't really want to do that. Like, I couldn't be responsible for knowing that I'd stopped my baby's heart. I didn't think that I could live with that. So when we went back a few days later for some blood pressure checks, the consultant came in to see us just to ask if we'd given it any more thought, and I explained both sides of it to him, and he just straight away just was like, well, no, that's not the right thing for you. If you can't give me a definite answer, then it's not the right thing. And it does impact you later on, like you obviously your grief anyway, it does have different effects on you. So we decided to, that was it, we would cancel the procedure, but we would go in that day for our follow-up for that week. And during the night of before we went for that next appointment, my belly went really tight, just very briefly, and I'd never felt that before. I wondered what it was, like almost, I don't know, like cramp. Didn't hurt, but I felt that it just, everything went really tight. And then when we went for our appointment, as soon as they put that probe on, I could see straight away that he died. And I just wonder if I already knew. I felt like I already knew. And if that tightening was maybe a movement or a last movement, I don't know. It feels kind of significant though.
When did that happen?
So we found out that Guy had died on the 10th of November, and then we're given options as to what we had to do next. We were referred back to our hospital. We were told that we'd need to go in and take a tablet which would stop all of your pregnancy hormones so that they could then induce me. So they made that appointment for us, and then we went there. We went there the next day and got that tablet. The appointment was very unpleasant. Walking into an antenatal day unit and sat at a reception desk waiting for a midwife as everyone else is coming in for their appointments, and you can hear all the baby monitors with the little fetal heart monitors going in the background. And we just felt like we were sat there for ages. And I thought, this lady knows what we're coming in for. Why are we why are we waiting so long? And I think because we'd be treated so differently at the other hospital, where we were just taken into private rooms straight away, it just felt more noticeable, I think. And then we finally saw her, and I think she felt like she needed to give us some, like, real grief support and some real counselling there and then, when all I wanted her to do was just give me a tablet and get out. I'd been in hospital twice a week, three times a week for the past fortnight. I just wanted to go in and get out of there, and she was just wanted to talk at me and tell me what was going to happen and tell me all about the hospital, where they go if they have postmortems, and how she's been to see it herself, and look at this wall of thank you cards that I've got from all the ladies that have then gone on to have, like, other babies. And I thought, this is the last thing that I am interested in right now. I really don't care about all those thank you cards and whatever. I just felt like she wasn't reading me. I was pretty sure that my body language was like, just get on with what we need to do. And I bet we were there for probably over an hour. She finally went and got this pill, but then we needed to sign a consent form for the induction, but there was no consultant about to do it. So I think by this point she could sense that I was getting a little bit distressed being there, and just went over to the delivery suite and grabbed any doctor that she could get hold of. He came over and was going through the consent form with us, telling us about the risks of terminating a pregnancy. And we were like, but we're not terminating it. He's already died. So obviously, because he didn't know anything, he was just like even more confused than us. So then I was having to like change all the form. And I thought, that is a big difference to us, because I kind of left it a little bit, even though I thought he's probably wrong in what he's saying. I thought, well, I'll just give him a minute. Maybe this is just how their terminology, then they're just classing it all as the same thing. And then Martin was just like, can you just explain that to me? Like, when you say termination, and then he was just like, oh, and I was like, yeah, no, he's died. It's not a termination. We just need to be induced. So I finally got that consent form signed, took my pill and got out of there. And then we returned 2 days later to get induced. I think I started to go into labour at home. I could feel really bad period pains sort of early in the morning. I just kept getting this like cramping, like quite frequent cramping. And then noticed a bit of spotting, so I told Martin and rang the delivery suite like first thing that morning. Just said, I know we're meant to be in at dinner time, but I think things have already started. Is there any way we can come in? And they were happy for us to just go in whenever. So we went up in the morning, and met our midwife, who was going to be with us for the day. It was lovely. Went through a mountain of paperwork with us, obviously, because it was a stillbirth. There's so much that they have to do and make us aware of, and offering postmortems and things, and making sure that they've done all of their paperwork. And finally got like the pessaries to induce us, and then got shown into another room. So we had two rooms. We had a delivery room, like a proper clinical room, and then next door to that was more of a family room. So we had like a big double bed in it, some chairs and a TV, some tea and coffee facilities, and they said like they're our rooms all day long. So we had use of those. My mum came, Martin's mum came, just sat like having drinks. Then you can feel it starting to get a bit more intense, and then I was trying to like pretend I was okay. I'm like, it's fine, it'll go in a minute. Because that relief, once those like cramps and those contractions stop, I was like, all right, breath of fresh air, this is fine now, like, it's all right. And then as soon as I'd like took that breath, they were back again. So decided to get some painkillers, and we'd been told at Manchester, like, just take whatever painkillers they throw at you. Whereas I was like, oh, I need to work my way up to this. I don't just want to go for like the big stuff straight away. I need to just work my way up. So I just got some paracetamol and Then it was sort of getting bad. I was just fidgeting constantly. Couldn't sit down. Didn't want to be stood still. Was just pacing about. So I asked for some gas and air, which she went to get. And Martin was just wanting me to take the strong stuff, take the morphine, they're offering you morphine. And I was like, I don't want it yet. Just let me see if this works. I've had some tablets. Let me see if it works with the gas and air. That's fine. But then that just wasn't doing anything. Had some diamorphine and that just wasn't doing anything. And I think by then you're just in a trance, just sort of like breathing your way through it, just sort of oblivious to everything else around you. I think Martin felt a little bit helpless. So I just said, like, just get my mum in here, get your mum in. Like, at least you can all chat amongst yourselves while I'm here. That's fine. And I had originally decided I didn't want anybody in there other than Martin when Guy was born. I think you do get past that point of caring who's there. I think before you go through all your labour, you're just like, no, this needs to be private. I don't want anybody else seeing all of this. And then when it came to it, I was like, no, I just really don't care right now. So then finally got to a point where I felt like I feel this intense pain in my back. And when she checked, she could feel his feet because he was breech. So he came out fine, probably in one or two pushes at 5:15 in the evening in his sack with a true knot in his cord. And then it took him away to sort of get him out of the sack and put him in a little basket for us so that we could have a look. And then we all met him. I think we were quite surprised. He was much bigger than we thought he was going to be. And I think probably more formed than we expected him to be. Very red and very swollen. It's just strange to see a baby because he didn't look like a baby how you would expect a baby to look. I think because obviously he was still developing, he probably looked like an 18-week baby rather than a 25-week baby. So it looked a bit shocking to look at him. I think even now I find it quite shocking to look at all of his pictures. So then she took him away and said they could put him in a cold cot and then we could just keep him with us then for as long as we wanted to. So she did that and we just went back into our little family room. Martin's mum left and my mum was there and my dad had turned up with a massive big picnic for us all, which was really cute. And then she brought Guy back in his cold cot. And then my dad got to meet him as well. And then we just got to spend the night with him. She'd taken little hand and footprints on a card and put them in with us. And then gave us this memory box, which had lots of nice little things in. So she'd used the kit for his handprints out of it and put them in a little card that came in it. Like a little angel in it, a little teddy bear. And a book. Guess How Much I Love You book. So we had a look through all of that the moment my dad went home, and that was it. Just surreal then, just like the three of us and not really knowing what to do, because he was so tiny and so delicate. We'd been advised it probably would be best not to touch him and hold him because we said we were going to go for a post-mortem. So I don't know if she was worried that we would maybe disturb his skin, and if he was so fragile, if we say broke him, if we damaged his skin or anything, they might not be able to test for things. So we left him in his cold cart, and Martin read him the story out of his box, and I think I felt a bit numb by that point. Didn't really feel any emotion. I don't think I believed that it was ours. And I don't know if the shock of it all, I just felt a bit like dead to it all. like it wasn't really happening. So we, when we woke up the next morning, we could see that he'd changed loads as everything had settled. It's like his swelling had gone down, but obviously made him, he'd looked a bit more sunken. And the midwife that day was really nice and took lots of pictures with us, helped us take some pictures. The hospital could have done it for us, but we were like had to wait all day for it, and we really just didn't want to be sat around waiting. So she helped us just take a few on our phones. And then we got the chaplain to come and see him. Martin really wanted to get him blessed. Neither of us are religious, but he was just like, oh, my nana will kill me if we don't get him blessed. So the chaplain came down and did a little reading to him and gave us these like butterfly cards, and she said if you can write messages on them, and they have a tree in the hospital chaplain, like a butterfly and dragonfly tree, and you can just pin your messages up on there. So we did that and went down, and that's quite heartbreaking to see how many other little butterflies were on that tree, knowing that people have been there in the same position and done that as well. And that was a really hard thing to write, knowing that we were writing a letter to Guy. It's like you don't really know what to write on it, do you? And then we felt it was quite cruel, even though he was in his cold cot. We didn't really want to leave him sat in there, because we could see that how much he was changing. So we decided we didn't really want to be waiting around for people. There was paperwork we still needed to sign for the postmortem, but there was nobody to come and sign it with us. So we just said we would come back like on the Monday, and we'd just come and do it with somebody then when they were free. And then asked if we could walk down to the mortuary with him, because we didn't really want to, felt a bit mean to send him down there on his own. So the midwife walked down with us and we sent him off, and then that was it. That was the last time that we saw him.
How do you feel about the time that you spent with Guy now, looking back on it?
I do wish that we probably got a bit longer. There's things that I wish that we'd done differently, like we'd been told to buy him a blanket because he would be small. So we went out shopping to try and find a blanket that he could have, obviously because no clothes were going to be big enough to fit him. So we'd found, like, I think, like, pacifiers, you know, like the little blanket squares that have, like, a teddy on. So we'd bought one of those for him. And, like, we'd picked out a teddy bear. Although I do wish we'd been given a bit more advice on, like, how to take pictures. I don't know if the midwives were maybe not as experienced in doing it. But I feel bad that the only picture I have of him is naked. I never thought to put the blanket on and take the picture again, or there was no little hat for him, or there was no clothes for him. So I wish we'd taken a few more pictures in different ways. Although, like, the ones that we do have were very nice. I don't know whether maybe more people should have come and met him, or I wish we'd been able to hold him, even if not like touching him, even if it was in all his blankets. Although I don't even know if I could have brought myself to do it at the time, because it's one of those, like, as soon as you get them, you probably wouldn't have wanted to let him go, so it was probably best that we didn't. But I do think there's things that we would probably do differently now, or that we'd explain to other people differently if they were going through it. We would be like, no, just make as many memories as you can. Yeah.
What was it like when you first met him? How did you feel?
Just in shock. I said, I felt very disconnected, like, didn't really believe that he was ours. Obviously, the next day, like, all the emotions come, and there's the reality of, like, what you've been through. And then it's just the fact that, like, that's our little boy, and that's always going to be forever, isn't it? We're never going to get to see how he changes. We're never going to see how he should have been born, what colour his eyes were. Yeah, just very surreal.
You mentioned that you filled in paperwork about postmortems and things. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, about your decision around the postmortem?
So we'd been advised at Manchester to have a postmortem just to try and get as many answers as possible. So obviously we had an idea that the placenta was the problem, and because we'd signed up to the Strider study, the placenta had to go straight to Manchester anyway, and we wanted to make that very clear when we were at the hospital. I think we must have said it about a million times to them, like, that he's going to go, isn't it? You've not done anything with it, it's going to go to Manchester. But then we were just told that if we have a postmortem, we might possibly get other answers as well. They can look for other things, other developmental things, and I don't know if they do like genetic tests as well that we could probably get answers from. So we came back a few days later to fill in the paperwork that basically just says we give permission to do it. He would be sent away to another hospital for the post-mortem. They would be as gentle with him as they can, and I don't really remember much else about it. We just kind of signed the form, and I think we read a few booklets about it. We were given lots of information, just the time of it. I just don't remember it other than, like, we need to have this done. Not just for him, but it's for our future children. Like, if we could get any answers from it, then that will help us in the future. And it was a massive thing for Guy to do for his future siblings, really.
And how do you feel about that decision now?
I'm glad that we did it. Before we were advised to do it, the reasons why we should do it, we were gonna have it done, but it made perfect sense why we should look for answers. Although it didn't show anything, he came back as perfect, apart from the placenta. But if we hadn't have had that done, we wouldn't have known anything any different. Even though we say we've got no answers, we know that there was nothing else wrong, which is a massive thing. Although still quite hard to process that your baby was fine, but they died.
What was it like leaving the hospital?
Really hard, because obviously you're on a maternity unit and there's only one door in and one door out, and you're walking out of that same door that everyone else is walking out with babies and balloons and happy relatives, and you're walking out with your memory box. And everyone else is completely oblivious to your situation. Not that you want to walk around with a badge that says, I've just lost my baby. Although you walk out with a lot of resentment for everyone else walking in to go and see all their relatives and meet all their newborns. So yeah, that's not the most pleasant of situations.
Do you remember, or tell me about those first few days and weeks back at home?
It's such a roller coaster. It's you're almost in a bubble. We were very lucky that all our family were supportive. Were looking after us, and we had friends that were looking after us and bringing us food. I think having to come straight home and arrange a funeral is probably one of the worst bits about it all. Yeah, one of the first days back at home. And you've got a funeral director coming around to your house to meet you. It's a really surreal scenario. But they were really lovely. Very caring and compassionate towards us, and explained everything that would happen. We originally didn't really want to have a service. I think it's the feeling of, well, nobody knew him. He wasn't here for everybody to come and congregate and do a funeral like you would usually go to. So we were quite happy for him to go to the funeral directors and for them to take him to the crematorium, and we would just pick him up. But then she explained to us that they still walk in through the front door and do their prayers and stuff like a service anyway. They still have a time slot, they still go in, they still put him on the front, he still goes off behind the curtain. And we just thought, oh my god, like, we can't, how can we not be there if that's, we just thought they would just take him, go through the side door, and to know that there's still some sort of service that happens when the funeral directors take him, we thought, well, we can't let him do that on his own. So we had a very small service that was just my mum and dad and my sister and Martin's mum. We just, Martin and my mum read out a couple of readings, like little poems. We played a couple of songs, and then that was it, 5 minutes, and we left him again. That's not a day that I ever want to do again.
What was it like telling people that Guy died? Do you remember talking to friends and telling people?
We had a couple of close friends we told at the time. I just physically couldn't even speak to get the words out to tell people. They knew what was going on, that he was poorly, so we just like messaged people to tell them that he died and what was going to happen next. But then in terms of once he was born, we just decided to use Facebook. We thought that is just the quickest way to get the message out there and not have to speak to anybody, really. We could just tell a mass amount of people as quickly as possible. So we did that while we were in the hospital, because obviously everybody knew that we were pregnant by then. So we felt we kind of had to just put it out there and let everybody know. I got such an overwhelming response from that. There were so many people that messaged me privately to say that they'd had similar experiences and that they'd had losses, various stages. And that was, I want to say, comforting to know that there was other people out there, but then wondered why nobody had ever said anything. And even then they were posting it privately to me, and I thought, well, tell people. I know it's not a happy event, and I think people just post happy things on the social media, but they should say something. It was nice to know that they'd opened up and they'd gone on to have their own children, and was trying to put that little bit of hope out to us that, like, you know, this has happened to us, but you know good things will still happen. It's a really supportive response, and I'm glad that we did it that way, because there's nothing worse is than people coming to you going, how are you doing? And you're like, oh well, actually this has happened.
Do you recall what were the sort of least and most helpful sort of responses that you got from people?
I think the most helpful things were just hearing other people's stories. Knowing that other people had been through it. Knowing that they'd still gone on to have children. I don't remember anything too unhelpful. I think there's just the cliche things that you hear, that, I don't know, like, I suppose, like, it wasn't meant to be, and, like, these things happen for a reason. Or I didn't hear as much with Guy, probably more with the miscarriage. But they creep in every now and then. They're probably not very helpful, not very comforting at the time. Because they think, well, there is no reason why your baby should have died. Even though we don't have an answer as such, we know that it was a placenta, but we don't know why that went wrong. There is no reason why that should have happened, is there? And I think I was a believer in, like, if it's meant to be, it will happen. Whereas, like, kind of had to take that with a pinch of salt now and apply it to situations very differently. But, yeah, people sharing their stories is the biggest help, the biggest comfort. I think, and people wanting to listen to yours. Few people that are willing to ask you what happened or let you talk about your experience is a big help, because a lot of people will shy away from it. They won't ask you because they're scared of upsetting you. But really, if somebody asks you and you get up, you're not getting upset with them, you would cry because you're so happy that somebody actually wants to talk to you about it. That nobody will ever get upset talking about their children, and I don't see why we should be any different to people that have living children who get asked how their kids are all the time.
How did you and Martin grieve?
Um, probably quite privately. We didn't really socialise very, very much, obviously, around that time. But we had a lot of other things going on within the family, so we kind of had to put it to one side. Because Martin's dad was poorly, so we did have to almost curb him for Guy to concentrate on the next big thing that was happening. Which made it very difficult because your emotions are through the roof. Your patience is zero. Your tolerance is zero. So it does make it hard. Especially when you're trying to support each other through very traumatic experiences. I don't really know how else to explain it. I just think with everything else that was going on, it was really hard. I think I just wanted to suck myself into a little shell and just hide.
Were you offered support or counselling? Or?
We got a call from our health visitor a few times. I think there might have been a bereavement midwife that rang. Although at the time you just think like, you just don't want to be mithered by people. You want to just be left alone with your family to get through those stages. It's hard to know whether to take professional advice, isn't it? Do you want some counselling? You just think, well, not right now. I just want to get through these first few days, weeks. You want to process what's happening and come to terms with it all. But the health visitor did ring up quite a few times. We did keep missing each other, but we did speak to her a few times. And the midwife from Manchester used to keep in touch quite a lot as well, and she'd make sure that we were doing okay.
Tell me about the support that you and Martin were offered by friends and the hospital, you know, generally by other people.
I think from professionals, I was probably offered more because the health visitors ring you, the midwives ring you to check how you're doing. I think the support for Martin probably came more from family and friends because they sort of ask how you're both doing, are you both doing okay? I do think there is a difference between what you're offered as a mum and what you're offered as a dad. It does feel like the focus is probably more on the mum, maybe because you've physically been through more, you may be followed up more than the dad. But yeah, I don't really know how Martin feels about what support he got offered, because Manchester probably offered him more support because they would always ask about him, and obviously when we went to see them they'd always ask how he was. But yeah, I guess he wasn't really offered as much as I was.
How do you remember Guy at home now?
We have a little teddy bear with his ashes in. So we have that with us. We have a little picture frame that we've got set up that has like a scan photo in and a couple of other little pictures of his hands and our hands. And just, we just bring him up in situations where we think, like, we wonder what he'd be like, and, like, amongst my friends, like, and their children, obviously, we would expect that Guy would have been, like, their best friends as well. obviously I've used his story and put his story out there quite a lot. I do a lot of things on social media to try and keep him remembered. Fundraising, we've done a lot of fundraising for mostly for Tommy's, and then we've done some for Aching Arms because they're the charities that we feel have helped us the most, and we're keeping his name out there through teddy bears and through runs, and people know the story of why they like supporting us for those causes. I think I'm going to make a scrapbook, which I wanted to do for his first birthday, really. I'm going to just do a scrapbook of all the little things we have, any little pictures we have of him, and pictures that people have sent with his name on, and put all those together just as a little time lapse of his first year and how other people are remembering him as well, which is always nice.
How did you mark his first birthday?
We did a tea party, a fundraiser tea party for Aching Arms. So all loads of friends and family came to that and had lots of cake. Did some raffles, so we raised quite a lot to get a few bears out there, which will go to other families. We'll have his name on, and then on his actual birthday, we did just a family get together and a balloon release. We did we dedicated 40 balloons to other babies, so through other people that we'd met on social media and. Other people that were following our stories that had lost babies, we'd asked if they wanted a balloon releasing. So we did a balloon for Guy, and then we did 40 balloons for all of his friends, and released all those with family, which was really nice. I think everyone felt like a big kid just watching all the balloons fly away. It felt important that we did something rather than just a private little thing on our own at home. It felt important that we marked it properly because that's his day. Like, the rest of the year has been about, it's been about me and Martin getting through it all and how we've survived it and our journey. But his birthday is his day, and it felt really important that it was about him. So I'm really glad that we did that for him. I just hope he saw his balloons.
How has Guy affected yours and Martin's relationship?
I think it's made us stronger. We've realised how much of a team we actually are. We have a lot of the same values, a lot of the same beliefs. We've agreed on a lot of things. We understand what we wanted, the decisions that we made. We both had mutual feelings about those decisions and why we wanted to do them. And we just think if we could get through that, we could keep fighting and we could get through anything.
How did you feel about getting pregnant again? And
there was a lot more anxiety. Obviously, having Guy was, there was lots of anxiety from having a miscarriage, but then having Guy and losing him so much later on just opened our eyes massively. Like, there is no safe zone to your pregnancy, and obviously I've met a lot of people online who have lost last babies at full term during labour. So I just think, well, we have no, there's no safety net now for us. Like, our milestone is to get to 23 weeks and hope that things are okay. But even after that, we're not going to feel confident and safe until we've physically got that baby in our arms. We didn't start trying after Guy for quite a while. We decided to wait a good few months, and we waited until we'd got our postmortem results back, because we needed to know if there was anything that had come from that and any tests that needed to be done. We didn't want to be pregnant and then that be affected. We couldn't have tests done or investigations done. So probably like 5 or 6 months later, we decided to start trying again. I think the initial shock had worn off by then, but there's still that fear, isn't there? I think once we saw the pregnancy test, it didn't hit me the same. I think I felt a bit disconnected from it. It was like, all right, well, the test says I'm pregnant, so we're pregnant, but didn't really let it sink in. It was like, it was a second thought, like everything else was there, and I had to remind myself that I was pregnant. But there's still those anxieties. You just want to get through. Like, you want to get to your first scan. You want to then get to your next one. You want to be followed up by people. So we just went straight back to Manchester rather than our local hospital for this pregnancy, because we could be followed up much earlier in the pregnancy, and obviously I was being monitored for my blood pressure as well. So we got to have a scan at about 6 weeks, I think, 5 or 6 weeks, and just saw that there was something there, which just, again, made it that bit more real, because you don't feel pregnant and your body's not really doing anything different. So just to see there was something there was a little bit more reassuring. And to know that we could have scans like in a few weeks' time and get followed up. But then we started spotting with that pregnancy too, at about 8 weeks, and had another miscarriage. Which I just knew as soon as I was spotting that was going to happen. Even though when I got checked out, had the scan, and baby was still fine, but they said the heartbeat was slow, I expressed how concerned I was that the baby was measuring small, because that was the same as my first pregnancy. It was measuring like 2 weeks smaller than what I actually should have been. And I said, well, that surely you should understand why that worries me, because Guy was measuring perfect, like he was measuring fine at his 12-week scan, whereas this one being small just feels like the first time all over again. And I was just told to come back in a week. Like, it could just be that the heartbeats only started going, and that's why it was slow, and maybe I ovulated at a different time to what I thought, and so maybe I am only like 6 weeks and not eight. I just thought, there's nobody's listening to me. All I wanted them to say was, well, yeah, these things are a sign that you could be miscarrying, but it could also mean this. But they didn't. They just like, well, it could be this and it could be that. And I thought, you're just giving me, it felt like they were giving me excuses. And I know they were trying to be hopeful, but all I just wanted them to say was, yeah, you could be right. This might not end well, but it could also be this. So I went back upstairs to see my midwives that we've known since Guy, and they agreed to see me a few days later instead of me going back in a week. So we went back 2 days later, and the baby had died, which I just knew. I just felt like going back downstairs and going, I told you so.
How are you feeling now about trying again and future pregnancies?
We're not scared of trying again. We want to keep going, and we've been seen by the recurrent miscarriage team, which has helped to know that somebody wants to do something. Somebody wants to look into why this is happening. But all of that's come back fine too. So we still don't have any answers to why we've had two miscarriages. It's a positive thing. We know that we can carry on trying, and we know that there's no extra barriers in our way, but that doesn't help our confidence when we get pregnant that this isn't going to happen again, because all we know is loss. We've seen everyone else get pregnant and come out of hospital with a baby, so we know it happens, but for us, all we know is a pregnancy ending. We've not got past that point where we can be happy. So it's just dealing with those anxieties, isn't it? And I suppose accepting them, because they're not going to go away. And knowing that it's normal to feel like that. And nice to know that we're going to get extra support, so we can be seen by the miscarriage team, early pregnancy, and we'll get lots of extra scans and lots of extra monitoring. It's helpful to know, but it's still not gonna make you any more confident that this is gonna work out. Much less naive is the best way that I can explain it.
Have you sought out any sort of emotional support from elsewhere?
I did try counselling. Maybe about 4 months, 4 or 5 months after Guy. I just found I was just getting irrationally upset, like in random places or at random things that usually wouldn't have bothered me. So I decided that I should probably get some help with it. So I went to some counselling, and I'd explained that it was difficult being on maternity leave because every day was a day off. So I was finding it really hard being at home and filling my days, whereas if you're at work, your day off is like catching up on everything else that you need to do, whereas I've got all day every day to do these things. So having the motivation to think of things to do and then do it was my issue. Like, I knew I didn't feel depressed in that I didn't want to get out of bed, I didn't want to get dressed, I didn't want to have anything to eat, that I didn't have that. I was up and dressed in the morning but didn't know what to do with myself after that. So went to see them and explained it, and I think they just sort of took that element of it and tried to help me with that rather than the issues around why that would be. So I'd said, like, if I find it was all or nothing, I'd either have a week or a few days where I'd be out and about with friends or doing something, and I was completely fine those days, and then as soon as I had a run of days where there was nothing was when I would like just hit rock bottom again. So he just gave me basically a planner, a weekly planner, and said, like, what do you need to do this week? What jobs have you got on? And, like, just slotted them in through the week and said, like, just try and use that to guide your week. Well, this isn't, like, very helpful. I don't know what else I expected from it, but that just didn't really feel very helpful, because but I'd had like 4 counselling sessions, and they do this questionnaire with you, like an anxiety depression questionnaire, which they repeat with you every single week. And after the 4th one, he was like, oh, it's massively improved. You're like back up to where we think you should be. Look, you were down here, like, when we first saw you in your assessment, so, yeah, we don't need to see you anymore. I was like, all right, okay. Like, fair enough, I did feel fine at the time, but he didn't talk through anything, but he said, like, seeing as you're doing so well, I don't want to start delving into things and talking about things and then knocking you in case that knocks you back. I'm like, well, okay, fine. And so that's all I had. Just these 4 weeks of, I wouldn't even call it cognitive behavioural therapy. I think that's what he was trying to do, but wasn't officially that. I'd walked away with a breathing exercise to help me when I was having an anxiety attack and a timetable to fill in to structure my week.
You mentioned using social media and meeting people in social media. Can you tell me about that?
Obviously, we put our announcement on Facebook. But I kind of took to my Instagram account to start sharing things. I found quite a few people, new followers, kept coming up on my account with the hashtags that I was using, even though I hadn't really delved into what I was putting myself. And then as I was clicking on them, found that they were all people that had lost babies, so started following them as well, just to see like their story and how they were coping, and found it a much friendlier place to be so open. And it was a really nice release to know that you was getting such positive feedback in a way from other people, and so much support from other people. Whereas I think Facebook doesn't really feel like a place where I could have kept posting the way that I was and about things. Because you think people very quickly get bored and probably come across as being miserable, and people don't want to see it, do they? It's different on Facebook. But Instagram was just felt like there was just this really nice community that had formed, and found that we started to like communicate and talk to the same people. The same people kept popping up, and just following lots of different stories and learning about other people and their babies, and just made quite a lot of new friends, which felt weird to say that they were friends, because you've never met these people, and there's this strange thing, isn't there, about meeting people online? Like, you don't know who they say they are, and but these were all just genuine people sharing their stories, and it was just really nice. I ended up meeting a few people at a memorial service. A couple of the girls that I was following were going, so we said, oh, well, if we will meet up there, just kind of put real life faces to the names and the stories, and that was really nice. And it felt like you just knew them straight away. You'd been talking to these people for months, and it was just really lovely. And then over the last few months, just found my own little group of friends that all have the same kind of values as you and the same outlook about sharing stories, and so many inspiring people that have just raised so much money and done so many wonderful things in name of their babies. I'm really proud that they're my friends. I actually met up with quite a big group, about 7 of us all met up a few months ago, and that was so nice. We talked to each other every single day, and it was just really nice to meet all these ladies in real life and share all our stories, share photos that we'd never shown anybody before. It's just not what you expect to find online, is it? To go on social media and meet all these people, but it was just the best place to do it, because anywhere else, nobody else understands your journey. Nobody else understands what it feels like. So to find this little group that can say what's in your head when you can't get the words out, you're like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel, and just makes you feel much less alone. There's this big wide world out there, and so many people not speaking up. It's easy to feel isolated, like this doesn't happen to anybody else, and then to fit into this niche group that nobody really wants to be in, but you're really grateful that there are other people there to support you and rally you along. It's nice.
What do you think it's important for people to know about stillbirth?
I just want people to understand that it's much more common than they think. There's like over 300 babies a month born, stillborn, every month, and I just think people are not as aware of it, like, because people don't talk about it, I suppose. It's not happy news, is it? People are not going to be putting it out there as much as they would like if their baby was born, and not sharing photos every day of things that are happening and their baby's changing. So it's just important to know that you're not on your own. It is happening, and we really need to understand why and educate everybody on that it's real life. It can happen to anybody, and for so many different reasons.
Is there anything you're particularly proud of, or that you particularly regret about your experience?
I don't know if I have any regrets. I'm proud that we've got through it. I'm proud that we can keep trying, and that we've got the strength to keep going and fight for these babies that we want. I'm proud that we've been open and that we've shared our story. I'd hate to... It's hard enough going through this journey anyway. I would hate to think how different you would feel if you had all that just trapped in there and you couldn't speak to anybody, or I didn't feel like you could speak to anybody. So I'm just proud that I took that leap, especially like I say on my Instagram, I'm glad that I put myself out there so publicly, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't have met the people that I have. I have a lot of friends and family that are very supportive, but it's really important to have had that network, which I would never have found otherwise.
And is there anything you'd like to pass on to other parents in this situation?
Just don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to share your stories. Don't worry about what other people think. Don't be ashamed. Just get the support that you need. And there's no right or wrong time to get it. There's no right or wrong way to grieve. If you want to be silent, be silent. But get the support if you feel like you need it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that you don't feel you've had an opportunity to say?
I don't know.
One last thing. If you could say anything to Guy now, what would you like him to know?
That we miss him. That we wish we could have got to know him. I wish that we could see what he would have looked like, who he would have become, what he would have done with his life. What kind of brother he would have been. What kind of parents he would have made us. We love him and miss him every day.